accession number 19817, Reel 1.
Major Malloy, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
I was born in Quetta, which is now Pakistan.
In which year?
In 1917.
How long did you stay in India for?
Do you mean as a child or?
Yes.
Until I was 7.
Did you have any education in India?
Only private day school.
What had your father done in India?
He was in the Indian Army in the 5th Gurkhas.
Can you tell me about your education in England, please?
I came home and went to a prep school in Gloucestershire. Although before that I had been to a small prep school in Crowborough in Sussex for a year or two. And I went to the prep school in Gloucestershire when I was 8. And stayed there until I was 13. And then I went to public school at Haileybury. And I was there until I was 16 and a half. And then I got ill and had to be advisable to take me away. And then when I was 17, I did a course at a commercial college in London for a year and did things like shorthand typing and bookkeeping, commercial correspondence. And then my health improved and they thought perhaps I could be able to go into the army after all. And indeed I was passed fit by a surgeon who had operated on me before, and I then had the prospect of sitting for the army exam. But I'd been away from school for nearly 2 years, so my father thought, well, I need a bit of brushing up. So I went for 2 terms to the local grammar school in High Wycombe, near where we lived. And there I went into the sixth form and was extremely well taught. And passed successfully into Sandhurst.
What illness did you have?
It was something called osteomyelitis, which meant a sort of tumour on my backbone or somewhere in that area. Had a couple of quite serious operations on that.
Was the education at Haileybury inclined towards India?
No, it wasn't really so much. There was a small, what they called an army class, but I wasn't I was in a general sixth form when I left. It had been recognised as one of the schools that provided army officers, as you might say, but it wasn't stressed in any way when I was there.
Where was the school located?
Haileybury, it's at Harvard, just outside Harvard. My father had been there before me.
Were you aiming at an army career?
Well, I didn't really know what to do, and I wanted to go abroad. I always had a sort of love of travel, and my parents were I think they wanted me to go in the army, although not into the Indian Army, because both my father and grandfather had been in the Indian Army, and both suffered illness and also years of separation and so on. So and my father thought, well, the days of India and the British Raj were numbered. He could see that was coming to an end, and if I did go in the Indian Army, he didn't think my career would last very long. which in the event he was probably right.
Which years were you at Sandhurst?
I went to Sandhurst in 1936 and did an 18-month course, 36-37, commissioned in the summer of 1937.
What did you think to the course there?
I approached it with a certain amount of trepidation, really, having been physically unwell and wondered whether I would stand the course, but as it turned out, I was able to do so and thoroughly enjoyed it all.
Did you learn much there?
Oh yes, it had a very good course, very broad curriculum and current affairs and that type of thing.
And after Sandhurst?
After Sandhurst, I was commissioned in the Northamptonshire Regiment. And the reason I joined that was because my father had done his attachment to the Northamptons in India before he joined his Indian regiment. And that was the only British Army connection we had. And I joined the 2nd Battalion, which was at that time in Northern Ireland. So I spent the first 18 months of my service in Northern Ireland, a place called Ballykinla, which is in County Down.
How were you treated as a young officer in the 2nd North Hants?
I'm made to feel that I was not very important to start with, but that soon resolved itself because there was an overwhelming flood of young second lieutenants and they didn't quite know what to do with us all. And at that time, the Home Battalion was a feeder for the Battalion on Foreign Service. And so we had very few men in the Home Battalion, and they were mostly composed of drafts coming in from the depot who were trained up and then in the trooping season were sent out to join the Foreign Battalion. So I found my army life rather tedious, really, the first 18 months. I did the usual courses and a lot of firing on the range because we were very keen on shooting. But on the whole, the existence was pretty tedious because there were so many officers and so few men for us to command, so to speak. But I applied the first winter to go abroad, to be posted to the 1st Battalion, which was in India. But I didn't. My application wasn't successful until the following trooping season, so I was 18 months at home. And then I went out to join the 1st Battalion in February 1939.
In what way were you made to feel not important?
What, in the Home Battalion?
Yes.
Just the usual attitude of seniors to juniors coming in, I think, and keep you in your place. You know, you're probably a bit puffed up with your ideas you'd learnt at Sandhurst and thought you knew everything, and you had to be put severely in your place. Was probably no bad thing.
So you left England in
February 39. Yes.
Can you tell me about leaving the country, please?
Went out on a troop ship through the Suez Canal, and I was actually put in charge of a draft of Cameronians. Although there were Northamptons on board, I was put in charge of this draft of these Scotsmen, and I was given a certain sum of money by their commanding officer before I left, and told to use it for to entertain them as best I could on the voyage. So my time was taken up by organising little competitions and games and and so on. And then I kept some of the money back, and when we reached India, I had a long journey all the way from Bombay to Calcutta via Lahore. And during that time, I was able to use up the rest of the money in buying soft drinks for them on the journey. But it was rather ironical because the soldiers of my own regiment who were on board couldn't understand why their officer was so busy looking after Scotsmen and not looking after them. However, I had to explain to them the situation I was in. And duly delivered the draft to Barrackpore just outside Calcutta.
What impression did these Cameronian troops make on you?
Well, they were from Glasgow and a pretty rough lot, but they had a very good corporal with them who was a regular soldier some years, and he was extremely good, and I got on very well with them.
What were your Northampton troops like?
Well, they were, at that time, as you know, England was had a lot of unemployment and so on, and they had gone into the army either because they had nothing else to do or because they'd got somebody's daughter into trouble or those sort of reasons. And they were a pretty ordinary bunch, really. They're typical of that time.
And once you got to India?
Once I got to India, I joined the battalion, which was at a place called Dinapur in Bihar. And they'd been up on the northwest frontier a couple of years before, had made a very good reputation for themselves. But Dinapur was pretty dead and alive hole. It was a very old station, very interesting from the East India Company days. And for example, they used to have elephant batteries and things like that. They're very old barracks. But from the point of view of soldiering, it was a complete backwater. The battalion was split up. They had one detachment at a place called Muzaffarpur on the other side of the Ganges, and there was a company, and then they had a company out in the Andaman Islands, which was quite was very, very cut off from control of the powers that be, and everybody who went there thoroughly enjoyed themselves and had a lovely, lovely time in the Andaman Islands. But it meant that as far as the battalion in Dinapur, we had really just the headquarters and a couple of companies there.
What kind of facilities were there for troops at Dinapur?
Just the barracks. There was one cinema, and that was it, really. There was the civilian station was at Patna, and outside that there was a place called Barrackpore, which was where the civilians lived, and there was a club there for the officers, which one could get to, but it was a 9-mile ride, and you could have a horse-drawn conveyance to take you there. Or you could hire the mess taxi. There was a mess taxi to be hired. But the officers were quite well off, really. They had a small club in Dinapur, although we all met each other all the time. There were tennis courts and a swimming pool. And you could even go sailing on the little river, which is a branch of the Ganges, nearby. And the officers had a pretty good time, really, but the troops were pretty pretty cut off and nothing to do, really.
Was there anything you could do about that?
Well, we organised. Everyone played games. That's good. We always had played games. every day, and there were various concert parties and that type of thing got up from time to time. But there was no question of any leave. The only person, only soldier I knew that had any leave was a Jew. And when the time of Passover came, he was applied for leave and was allowed a month's leave in Calcutta, which presumably there was a Jewish community there which he went to. But he was the only soldier I knew who went on on leave anywhere. The other soldiers had leave in barracks, which meant that they just didn't get up in the morning and just hung around. But of course, to relieve this, we had the hill stations we used to go up to, and the hill station for Dinapur was Darjeeling. So almost as soon as I'd arrived out in India, the first hill party went up to Darjeeling. So that was a nice experience. And while I was there, I organized a 10-day trek for a party of troops and myself. We went out to go as far as the top of a hill from which we could see Everest in the distance. We went round and into a part of Sikkim on the borders of Nepal up there. And that was enjoyable, enjoyed that. And the men enjoyed that too, the ones who accompanied me.
Do you have any disciplinary problems with the soldiers?
No, not really. They're extremely well behaved.
What was the function of the battalion at Dinapur?
Internal security. We had one company, it was on 48-hour alert, had to have its kit ready packed, and they were ready to be dispatched to a place called, I can't think of the name of the men, but it was an industrial area not far away.
Jamshedpur?
No, it wasn't Jamshedpur. It was, I'll think of it anyway. Can't think of it at the moment. It was that sort of place where there was an industrial complex where they thought there might be rioting or trouble. And we had to stand by for that. But we were never called out during the time I was there. The population of Bihar was at that time 26 million. And just the one British battalion, or part of it as we were, responsible for the internal security. But all the time I was there, it was pretty quiet.
What were your relations like with local Indians?
Well, we were at Dinapur off and on, really, because in the beginning of 1940, we were moved to Jhansi. I'm touching. We moved to Jhansi, and that was a more of an operational brigade station.
When was that, did you say?
January 1940. And so we thought that we were then going to perhaps go to the Middle East or Ethiopia or somewhere like that. In fact, our brigade commander was Brigadier Slim, later the Field Marshal. And there we, the whole battalion was gathered together, and we became highly trained and efficient and so on. And I thought we were in a very good position to join the brigade when it went overseas. But unfortunately, we had a commanding officer who, I don't really know what it was, but he got up against Brigadier Slim. So instead of joining his brigade when they went to Eritrea, as it was, we were left behind. And lo and behold, we went back to Dinapore, carried on with the internal security, which was a great blow to everybody, and very bad for morale, as we really thought we were going to join the to get into the war.
Had the declaration of war created any kind of stir where you were?
Yes, in September 1939, when war was declared, we were sent internees. These were Czechs and Romanians and Hungarians and that type of thing, who were working in India in various firms. And they were interned, and we had a body of them come to Dinapore, and they were put into, we had one end of the barracks, there was an isolation hospital which was used for these internees, and there was a barbed wire fence hastily erected around it, and a guard put on them, but they were completely inoffensive sort of people, and rather objected to having been uprooted from their jobs and put into internment. They didn't stay very long with us and were then moved on to more central camps in other parts of India. There was one Italian who was, I think he was an Italian officer who had been taken prisoner in Eritrea, and he turned up there, and he was a bit garrulous and aggressive. But he was on his own, one on his own, and we were able to deal with him all right.
In what way?
Well, just explain to him that he was now a prisoner of war and would have to do what he was told. And he moved on too to a prisoner of war camp elsewhere.
So when did you go back to Dinapore after Jhansi?
We went back in 1941, but yes, we had just over a year at Jhansi.
Then what happened?
And then we were at Dinapore again, back to the old routine of internal security, and then we were had detachments sent to Allahabad, had a company sent there, which was had been denuded of any British troops. And that was one detachment we had. And then we started getting a bit more equipment because we'd been lacking in any equipment. In fact, we'd been carrying about wooden replicas instead of the actual weapons. Anti-tank rifle, a sort of piece of pipe with a wooden butt stuck on it, and wooden light automatics, and we had to, any training we did, we had to pretend that we had all these weapons, which is not good for morale after nearly 2 years of war. When we were back at Dinapore, we had another hill station called Rani Ket we went up to. And from there I was able to organize another trek into the Himalayan foothills, which was much enjoyed. I took a bigger party that time. We went right up to one of the glaciers. Not equipped in any way to do any mountaineering, but just trekking, they call it nowadays.
What did this low morale, how did this low morale show itself?
Well, by that time, the regulars, they were pretty well all regulars, except for some who'd come out in drafts from England, but very few, and they'd had their repatriation deferred. It used to be 7 years with the colours and five on the reserve, and usually they came out to abroad in their second year, so they had about five in their fifth year abroad, fourth or fifth year, they were due for to come home. But when war broke out, this was deferred by a year, and so that was a bad blow to people who'd been expecting to go home that year, to be put off a year. And then due to lack of shipping and so on, owing to the U-boat activity, the repatriation was further delayed. So in the end, by 1942, we were getting soldiers who'd been already 7 years abroad. But, well, we were prepared to accept it as it was we weren't involved in the fighting, but we had to accept the conditions which arose from it.
What do you remember happening next?
The next thing was the Japanese in December 41, and as we all know, they overran Malaya and so on, and we were mobilized out of the blue in February 1942, and this was a rather hasty mobilization. We had equipment arrive for us, still no weapons, but all the trappings of mobilization we had to go through. And in a very short time, we were sent down to Calcutta and to Calcutta docks. And there at the beginning of March, we were put on a boat, and we weren't told where we were going, but it was pretty obvious. And we were put on the boat with another British unit who had come from elsewhere in India, the Border Regiment. And the two battalions were put on this boat together. It was an old pilgrim boat that used to take pilgrims to Mecca. And it had no proper facilities of any kind, but just a boat. There we were, and the men were all crowded in. You could hardly step over each other on this ship. And at the docks, we were issued with these weapons which we'd never seen, like Bren guns and 2-inch mortars and all these things, which up to that time we hadn't been issued with. And they arrived packed in thick grease in their boxes. And so the first task was to try and get all this horrible grease off. And this was done. And then there were one or two young officers on board who'd use these weapons before they'd come out to India. And they were able to run classes on board to teach everybody how to use them. Well, we knew in theory, but we hadn't actually handled them. We had in India, they had a similar light machine gun called a Vickers Berthier. It was an extremely good weapon used on the frontier, and we'd been equipped with these, but the Bren gun was new to most people. Well, we were on this ship, and lo and behold, it set sail down the Hooghly in Calcutta, and we all wondered what we were in for. And got down to the mouth of the Hooghly, where a sort of convoy of ships had formed. And then we woke up the next morning and found the ship going back up in the direction from which we'd come. because Rangoon, for which we were destined, had already fallen to the Japanese. So mercifully and thankfully, we came back to Calcutta again. But then, of course, the awful blow came. Where do we go now? And sure enough, it was back to Dinapore. And there were all the native contractors and servants whom we'd said a thankful goodbye to, waiting on this platform, waiting on the station, waiting in the barracks to greet us. And they all shook their heads and said, "We knew you wouldn't get anywhere." So there we were, back in Dinapore again. But luckily, our time there, we remained mobilized, and we were given a lot of transport then, which we hadn't had, Dodge trucks and so on, which, so it was a big program of driver training went on.
Major.